If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
Welcome to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. It's Tuesday, so we're ready to get you up to date on a lot of things going on. I tell you what, sometimes we have to struggle for things to write over the holidays, but the number of topics that are being covered by these last meetings before the holiday break, the Christmas break, is amazing. So we're going to have a lot of stuff to write about over the next 2 to 3 weeks. So we're going to get you up to date on a lot of that stuff in this hour. Although we're going to look back on some things too. You know, a lot of things, you know, a lot of times things that take place, there's a vote, there's a lot of debate, and then you got to go back like a week later and look at it and sort of do an autopsy of what happened. And that's what we're going to do with the the debate over the $20 million to FSU. And the reason why we're going to do this is because there are so many misinformed people that I see posting on social media. I don't know if they're doing it on purpose, or I know some of them are not, but they just don't know. They don't know the facts. And, you know, to give out kudos to somebody who didn't support the $20 million going to FSU stadium improvements and saying that they stood, you know, they stood strong against the insiders and, you know, and wasteful spending, and to not recognize that that same person had voted to give them $15 million instead of $20 million, I think doesn't do your argument justice. There's a lot of nuance here about who voted for what and why. And what we'll do in this second segment after our intro here is we're going to go through all 12 politicians that weighed in on the $20 million, and we're going to tell you the consistency or inconsistency of their votes. We're going to tell you the ones that voted differently from the FAMU $10 million and the FSU $20 million and what they said. But again, I think it's important to understand this because, look, we've got campaigns being run on this issue. Diane Williams-Cox is facing a candidate that said this was the number one issue. And so I think it's important to make sure that everybody understands the nuance and where everybody stood on this vote, because it's being used, again, as a political tool. And we're going to get that straight for you in the next segment. As I said, there's a school board meeting tonight. There's a Leon County Commission meeting today. Number of issues on the Leon County Commission agenda. And so we're going to go over three or four of those. One of them is there's an item to help address the panhandling issue and the, you know, begging for money at red lights, sleeping in parks. So we'll tell you what their options are and what they can vote on. There is some the staff of the Leon County Commission is trying to get the County Commission to go along with some incentives for some first responders, because obviously it's not news that over the last, you know, year or so, we've had a lot of problems recruiting first responders, be it emergency medical personnel, police officers, fire people, firemen. So we'll go over the incentives that they're trying to that will be up for consideration. Also, there's an interesting sustainability policy that they're going to consider at the Leon County Commission meeting. And this has to do with retrofitting all the County Commission buildings to meet certain codes. We'll go over what those codes are. They're environmental codes, climate change-driven codes. But they put a price tag on it. And so this is what you'll be paying. And so we'll go over that. I mean, it's not an insignificant number. But I think, again, the transparency here is that, you know, we've got an item that's telling you exactly how much it's going to cost. And then also want to get you up to date a little bit on this new development behind Childs High School. Now, we've talked about this before, but this is on the Leon County Commission agenda. This is a rather significant development. Again, it's all around Childs High School off of Thomasville Road, and they're voting on the planned unit development. And so we'll give you some highlights on that. So those will be the four items we cover, and that'll be at the bottom of the hour. And then we'll get you up to date on a couple state issues, and then we've got the latest on the real estate sales here in Leon County. and we'll go through that. Prices are definitely moderating. We'll tell you what we see on that and direct you to some other information. And before I get out of here in this segment, wanted to go over some of the latest campaign reports for the local races that are coming up next year. The biggest race, and when I say the biggest, is the one that's going to probably get the most publicity, has the most money so far, is the Tallahassee City Commission seat 3 between newcomer, I say from a political perspective, newcomer, David Bellamy and Jeremy Matlow. December 10th, the candidates reported their campaign fundraising numbers, and Mr. Bellamy raised a little over $60,000 in his last month. His previous month raised about 30, I think it's 35. So he's got a total of $104,000. Commissioner Matlow, who is running for re-election, has got a total. His campaign account's been open for a while. He's got a total of about $56,000. So Mr. Bellamy, you know, as a first-time politician, is raising some significant money. And this is the race that is going to dominate the news. And, you know, right away there is, an article and comments from both the Matlow and Bellamy camp that I want to get you up to date on. So FloridaPolitics.com wrote a story about this, and Matlow criticized the large donations from the companies who have received contracts from the city. And so this, here we go again. You can see that if you are getting contracts from the city, they don't want you donating any money, or this, they're going to be very critical of people donating money to candidates. Matlow's comment was, the reason we're seeing so much money thrown around is because the insiders are seeing the power of everyday people standing together, and it scares them. The vast majority of donors are supporting our campaign because they know even though they can't afford to write a $1,000 check, they deserve to be represented in government. So Bellamy, in response, said that he has received donations from businesses and other Tallahassee residents because they are upset at dysfunction at City Hall. So you start to see the narrative of how this campaign is going to unfold. Quote, Bellamy says, I think they want results and not angry rhetoric. I look forward to returning civility and effective leadership to our city commission to help our impoverished and start talking about things we can fix. In another article, Bellamy says, you can't take rhetoric to the grocery store. And so I think, again, so Matlow's argument with Bellamy is that he's just part of the insider network, and that he's fighting against. Bellamy's argument is that all Matlow does is fight. He doesn't get anything done. I think this is going to be a great race, because I think those are two very, when you see those type of narratives around a campaign, then what happens is, all right, you've got those narratives out there. Now you start looking at the nuance behind each of those campaign slogans. Is it just a slogan, or is it actually true? And here you can actually start to really look at some things over the campaign. You know, has Matlow got anything done? And then you start dividing it up. You know, ethics, probably. Economic development, maybe his focus is somewhere else. On the other side, is Bellamy just being supported by insider interest? Or is that an issue? And so, again, shaping up to be a campaign that we're going to really be able to talk about and maybe get down to some issues. Now, I will tell you, the other reports, are not a lot, not very significant. Some more people getting into races, which we can talk about, and I'll touch on that when we get back. But nothing to the degree that we see with the Bellamy Matlow race. So when we get back, I'll just touch on a couple new entrants in these local races, and then we'll move on to diagnosing the FSU vote for the $20 million going to stadium upgrades. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.
Hear the drums echoing tonight, and she hears only whispers of some quiet conversation.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. Got to get right into it. Got a lot to get covered. Finishing up the candidates who are running for office. We talked about the city commission race. There's two other, there's race for mayor. John Daly has raised what, 100 and, no, where is Mayor Daley here? Can't even see it. Well, the seat, that was seat three, Mayor Daley, $137,000. He's running against one candidate, Whitfield Leland, who's raised $150. Diane Williams-Cox has raised $32,000, running against Adner Marcellin, who has not made a report yet. So, and then we've talked about the other city commission seat, Bellamy and Matlow. On the school board, there's three school board races, but there's only one person in each race. So we really don't have any races to talk about. Anthony DeMarco is a challenger. He's filed for Alvin Striplin's seat. She has not filed yet. Daryl Jones, an incumbent, has filed. And Marcus Bernard Nicholas has filed for Joey Bowen's seat. She is an incumbent. She is not yet to file. So we'll report more on that. County Commission, look, there's four seats there. There are, looks like there's a total of 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, about 13 people running for office. I'm not going to list all those. The new ones that have entered that we haven't talked about is Dustin Revis has signed up to run for the seat that Christian Dozier is vacating with David Hawkins. And then also Benjamin Horboy has signed up to run for the at-large group, which Nick Maddox has also already declared his campaign. He's the incumbent. Rudy Ferguson is that race, and so is John Liam Coulter. So this, look, this will start, these races like the Matlow, the Bellamy race will start to take shape as more people get in, raise money, and start to have to answer questions. I would expect, just from looking at this, I would think that the Adner Marcellin race, when he raises some money, will, given the status of Diane Williams-Cox, will be probably the next race to really get some publicity. So anyway, we'll keep you posted on that. All right, now I want to pivot back to this autopsy of the vote on the FSU $20 million for stadium upgrades. And so look, this is going to be become a political issue. It's going to become a bumper sticker issue. And you know, for those who really want to know the facts and the nuance behind this, there's so much misinformation that is being, you know, spread on social media. And so I want to start with this. First of all, there were three projects for upgrading sports facilities. There was the TCC ask of $1 million. There was the FAMU ask of $10 million and the FSU ask of $20 million. Now, the difference. First of all, the TCC money came from the American Recovery Act money. It did not come from the economic development grant money that the FAMU money and the FSU grant came from. So I think that's an important thing from the very beginning when you're comparing them. That is going to be a delineation. Now, having said that, you know, what I looked at is who voted. When you look at the 12 members of the city commission and the county commission make up the Blueprint IA, wanted to go back and look at their voting record on these three items. Okay, so out of the 12, all 12 voted for the TCC $1 million allocation. And on the FAMU allocation, only one voted against that I could find, and that was Christian Dozier. So 11 of the 12 voted for the FAMU $10 million coming from the economic development pot of money from the Blueprint sales tax. So her argument, Christian Dozier's argument for voting against it, was she didn't think that kind of investment was warranted from the economic development money, although she voted for the TCC million because it came from a separate pot of money. So now, looking at the FSU vote, that vote was 7-5. So we had seven people that voted for the FSU. Those were Mayor John Daley from the city, Curtis Richardson, and Diane Williams-Cox. They all three voted for the TCC money and the FAMU money. Now, from the county, you had voting for the FSU money was Nick Maddox, Bill Proctor, Jimbo Jackson, and Carolyn Cummings. They all voted for the FAMU money and also for the TCC money. So those seven, you know, have to defend the fact that, look, we think that these sports facilities were worthy of these investments. And so they could argue. Now, you might say, well, you shouldn't have spent any money on those, but at least their argument would be, look, we're consistent, and we've got the studies to show that they're going to generate an economic return. Now, the five that voted against the FSU $20 million, this is where it gets a little bit more nuanced, and this is important for listeners to understand. Okay, out of those five, one of them was County Commissioner Christian Dozier. Now, she had already voted against the FAMU money, and so her vote here is somewhat consistent in the sense that she didn't want the money going to the stadium upgrades. Her argument would be that the TCC money came from a different pot. Then you have County Commissioner Brian Welch. Now, he didn't get to vote for the FAMU money because he was not in office. However, he did vote for the TCC money, and he voted against the $20 million going to FSU. Now, this is where social media is taking a lot of liberties. People that are posting on social media about Brian Welch, Commissioner Brian Welch, you know, standing up for those who didn't support giving FSU the $20 million. When the fact is, his argument, which I think was a very good one, was that he wanted to give them $15 or $10 million so they could have some money left over in the pot of the economic development money for future projects. And so to say that he voted against that, helping FSU at all, is wrong. He voted against giving them $20 million. He actually, in a motion that was made by Leon County Commissioner Rick Miner, supported giving them $15 million, but it failed 8-4, which brings me to the next question. Who voted for giving them $15 million? Well, Rick Miner did, Brian Welch, also Porter and Matlow. So now, the question is this. Is Rick Miner, who came out and voted against giving the $20 million, he really wasn't against helping out FSU. It was just the amount of money that was going to go to FSU. Now, the bottom line, the way to look at this, the three people that voted for the FAMU money and voted against the FSU money was County Commissioner Rick Miner and City Commissioners Jeremy Matlow and Jack Porter. Now, Porter and Matlow are very clear in saying, look, the money to FAMU was to keep the season going, and so their argument was that FSU didn't need the money as bad as FAMU because FAMU's season might not have even taken place. Therefore, that's why they voted for it. Now, note that their argument is not that the money was actually deserved given the parameters of how you spend the economic development money. It was just that they needed it very quickly. All right. Now, their argument against FSU was, look, they already have a lot of money. They don't need this money. So, you know, my critique of that assessment was I didn't really look at the economic development numbers. This was an argument that's being made basically on need versus the economic return. Because if they looked at that, there would be a different argument. Now, listen, that's an argument to be made, and voters are going to have to look at that because this is going to be a campaign issue. Now, on Commissioner Rick Miner's side of this, from a political standpoint, you know, him changing his vote, because he actually, I think, initially supported the $20 million, but now has come back and changed it. He's in sort of a little bit of a pickle because he supported the $20 million. He tried to get a motion passed that would have supported $15 million, which, if you think about it, was probably the better way to go for everybody. But then his last vote was to vote against it. So he's going to have to explain that in a very nuanced way during a campaign if people bring that up. All right, look, when we get back, we'll put a bow on this issue, and then we'll pivot to Leon County Commission items that will be taken up at their meeting today. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3 as we try to diagnose the vote and the debate over this FSU funding. And I got to tell you, you know, I consider myself an expert in this area, and it is very confusing. I'm going to read something for you right here from the minutes of a blueprint meeting. Commissioner Matlow moved, seconded by Commissioner Porter, to allocate $10 million for repairs at Doak Campbell Stadium and direct staff to bring back an analysis of FSU's full project for IA board consideration in the strategic planning process in February 2022. So all those that are out there saying that, you know, Commissioner Matlow and Commissioner Porter are standing on the side of the poor people who are being raked over the coals from this sale, this blueprint sales tax going to Doak Campbell Stadium. It appears to me that it was not a matter of supporting dollars to FSU Stadium. It was about how much. And so I'd be interesting to go ahead and read the specifics of this, these minutes here. But again, it looks like that Matlow and Porter were supporting $10 million for the repairs to Doak Campbell Stadium. So, you know, that's not what you hear in the rhetoric. You hear in the rhetoric that this is about insiders trying to steal $20 million from the downtrodden here in the city of Tallahassee. Well, you know, again, if you just read the plain words of these minutes from this meeting, it looks like it's not about stealing money from the downtrodden. It's about how much money you steal from the downtrodden. So it'd be interesting to get these. And this is, again, this would be something that you would see in a debate between these candidates like Matlow and Bellamy. When Matlow says, well, you know, I stood up against this $20 million. Well, no, not really. You stood up half against half of that $20 million. If this is, I mean, again, I don't know how these minutes, you know, is this some kind of strategy to just delay and then vote against it after you said you were going to support it? Who knows? But look, this is a nuanced issue, and I think it's being positioned to be a political issue that, you know, I think very few people are consistent on their vote, other than the seven that voted for all the money to go to these stadiums, and then they've got the argument that you shouldn't have done any of that. But anyway, all right, I want to get away from this and move to the Leon County Commission meeting, which is going to be taking place this afternoon. We'll have a reporter there. A couple of issues that I wanted to make you aware of. The commission will be asked to approve strategies to support the recruitment and retention of emergency medical services personnel. Now, this is, you know, this is the, you know, goes along with the problem of these first responders, police and fire, having such a tough time keeping them hired or getting new hires. And so it is also an issue with EMS. Obviously, this, some of the issues in terms of work conditions, the COVID pandemic. And so the cost to implement this proposal is approximately $220,000. The fiscal impact to provide the proposed extra shift incentive, stipend, and special day stipend would be $364,000 and $84,000 respectively. So that total is so over $400,000. I think there's a little bit of money left in the fiscal year 2022 budget. So that's $220,000. Says here adequate funding is available from EMS fund balance to support the remaining cost. So look, this is starting to trickle down in the sense that, you know, the problems we're having mitigating the effects of nationwide paramedic shortage. And, you know, they say it's been exacerbated by the COVID-19 pandemic. I wonder how many people actually, I wonder if they had to leave, if they lost any of these EMS people from people not getting vaccinated. Could have been an issue on that policy. The other one I wanted you to be aware of was this proposed building sustainability policy. The item they're going to be considering is seeking board to approve or adopt a proposed building sustainability policy, providing guidelines and minimum requirements for the construction and renovation of Leon County owned and operated buildings. Now, this is not for private construction. This is for buildings that are owned by Leon County government. Does have a fiscal impact. Says here that if they accept these guidelines, that the building sustainability policy will increase the capital improvement and cost between 5 to 10% for the construction and renovation of county-owned buildings in order to achieve the proposed sustainable design standards. Now, the caveat here is, the however, Overall building operating costs are anticipated to decrease with each sustainable design building, thereby over the life of the building, offsetting this initial capital investment. So, in other words, their argument is by putting money up front, they're going to have an impact on, you know, sustainability, which costs more, but over the life, it will be recovered. So that is, you know, I think that most of the elected officials buy into this approach, but it will cost more on the upfront side of things. Now, the other issue I wanted to look at is this homeless issue that says consideration of policy options to address public health, safety, and homeless. Now, you know, the item here is to they're going to provide a report on the issues related to the homelessness issue here, and that has to do with panhandling at intersections and also people camping in parks. And so there's some issues here with the ordinance because they can't get any law enforcement to enforce some of the laws here that are on the books because of their there's a little bit of discussion about are they against federal law or state law. So the options that the county commissioners are going to be faced with on this item is to direct staff to develop a draft ordinance reviewing the code laws of Leon County that address panhandling and camping out in parks. The second option is to direct staff to develop a draft ordinance to address any or all of the following. Now, this is the important one. A, camping or sleeping in certain public areas, are constructing or maintaining any tent structure or other objects intended to be used for camping or sleeping in certain public areas. B, soliciting any of any kind in the medians in the unincorporated area only. And C, basically using the bathroom in public areas. So that is going to be, this is going to be an interesting issue because this is going to run up against in the city, I think it would probably be more of an interesting vote, but in the county, this is basically about enforcing enforcing laws. And so, you know, will there be, this is an item that's is under the general business category. And so it's not consent item. So there will be discussion about this. I'm sure there'll be representatives from the Leon County Sheriff's Office to tell them, you know, well, listen, what is the problem with enforcing this? Now I did see, not to conflate this with what's going out in California, but I did see a park that had like a covered area where you grill and have picnic benches with a pretty solid roof. It was completely built out and homeless people were living there. And so this is an issue that it looks like the county's interested in trying to nip in the bud. So we'll see how that goes. Now, the last issue, and look, there's 45 items at the Leon County meeting. I don't know if this is by design, but this is the last meeting of the year, and there's a lot of stuff here, and we'll get to most of it that Taz reports. But the other issue is to look at this development that is being approved behind Childs High School. It's 162 acres. The item here that's is going to be a first and only public hearing to consider adopting the proposed ordinance amending the zoning map to change the zoning classification from rural zoning district to the Bradfordville Hills Planned Unit Development Zoning District for approximately 162 acres subject site located on the west side of Thomasville Road. So what they're doing here is this is land that will be included in the urban services area that was zoned rural, but now they're wanting to get it changed so that they can build some homes there. There's going to be obviously commercial development. Have not heard a lot of complaints about this. There's going to be a lot of green area out there. I know that the school board is considering buying, I think, about 25 acres for possible expansion at Childs High School. And so this is a development, again, that is it's outside the city limits. We'll see if there's any. It'll be, again, interesting to see the vote on this because this is trying to address the need for housing in the Northeast area. You know, we've seen this now in terms of, you know, people talk about affordable housing, but there's also housing needs for people who want to live in the Northeast for various reasons. They can afford to live out here. They believe that the schools are more attractive. And so there's a demand, as we've seen the prices really increase there. As we'll talk about in the next segment, prices do seem to be flattening out. But again, a very big development that's on the agenda for the Leon County Commission that we'll be keeping an eye on. And as I said, we've talked about this before here on Above the Fold, and we've written some articles about it because it will have an impact on the school population there, obviously Childs and Deer Lake. So anyway, we'll have more on that after the vote. All right, when we get back, we'll talk about real estate numbers and get you caught up on a couple of state issues. So stay with us here on Above the Fold. I'm Steve Stewart. We'll be right back after this break.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. Our last segment wanted to look at some state issues, and we'll look at some local real estate numbers. The campaign for governor here in Florida, I think we all know it's going to be a close race, a close vote. And when I say close, it could be a blowout, would be 4%. You know, if you won 55-45 or 54-48, anything like that would be a blowout. DeSantis barely beat Andrew Gillum and had more money than Andrew Gillum. So, but what's happening now when you start looking at the amount of money being raised in this race, so Charlie Crist is celebrating having more than $5 million on hand, and Governor DeSantis has over $60 million on hand. So that's a huge divide. Freed is behind Charlie Crist in this. So, and then further back is Taddeo, Senator Taddeo. You know, the question is this race going to be different in 2022 than the close races we've had in the past, regardless of, who was running, because you just have Democrats and Republicans in the end. So, we've seen some polling that shows that DeSantis is pulling away a little bit from these two. I mean, can you just imagine if Charlie Crist was to beat Nikki Fried in the primary and Senator Taddeo, then you would have Charlie Crist, a former Republican, running against Governor DeSantis. Now, you wonder exactly what would happen in that situation, but, Agricultural Commissioner Fried is running in some strong headwinds in the sense of trying to raise money. The ethics complaint that was filed by a GOP operative, and, unless those things get to the point of probable cause, they're viewed as very political. But this did reach probable cause, this ethics complaint filed against Nikki Fried. So now it's not about the messenger. It's about the content of the complaint. And that's going to dog her for the next few months unless it gets settled. And so, anyway, that's sort of the shape of the gubernatorial race at this point. Wanted to focus briefly on this, the article that we have up at Talis Reports. DeSantis takes aim at federal immigration policies. Governor DeSantis focused on national politics last week as he rolled out a series of proposals for the upcoming 2022 legislative session aimed at border policies of President Joe Biden. DeSantis called for state lawmakers to fight against the Biden border crisis by passing legislation to expand a law targeting so-called sanctuary cities and to bolster the e-verify employment rules. During a news conference at Jacksonville International Airport, DeSantis also said he wants the legislature to bar contractors from doing business with the state and local governments if the contractors work with the Biden administration to transport people who entered the country illegally. So DeSantis, quote, we just cannot be doing contracts with companies that are knowingly and recklessly facilitating bringing people here into our state illegally. So now this is that old, debate about the federal government doing things in your state that you don't like. And so there used to be this thing called federalism where a lot of the powers were in the hands of the states. But now that you have debates about, immigration, which has traditionally been seen as a federal role, you've got a president who is allowing some of this immigration to happen, and they're distributing these illegal immigrants across different states. And so DeSantis is trying to, you know, obviously score political points, you know, off of this. And he's got a lot of blowback on social media. But one of the analogies that I heard, which I think is sort of interesting, is if blue states can provide sanctuary for illegal immigrants and that not be against, you know, federal law, then why can't red states or people that are interested in actually, you know, stopping illegal immigration, why can't they institute sort of anti-sanctuary policies? So this is what we're going to run into. I think, and again, you could call this federalism because some states are choosing to do other things. Now, I don't know the intricacies of what's, you know, what's legal and illegal in terms of the law, but I mean, if you take this and look at the abortion issue, you know, Roe versus Wade is not about outlawing abortion. It's about giving the power of states to either endorse abortion or to outlaw it. And so that's called federalism. Now, there was, you know, unless it's a right that's protected under the Constitution, states are supposed to decide that. And we'll get into, you know, what happens with the abortion law. But this is this immigration issue, again, will be a political issue. And I think that DeSantis's move has a little bit of rational appeal if you start thinking about what these other blue states are doing with regards to sanctuary cities. So anyway, a little bit of state news there. Now I want to pivot back to local. In this segment, we're looking at some real estate numbers. As you know, Taos reports, and we report it here on Above the Fold. We cover monthly the change in the single-family residential market, and we do a you know, a sales report looking at a comparison to a year ago. And in November, this is what we're looking at is November. The number of transactions was up 14% from 265 a year ago to 304. Still very solid increases in transactions. The average price last year was $303,000, and this year is $313,000, a growth of just over 3%. That's when you look at month over month. Now, when you look at the annual averages, you're starting to see something take place, and that's prices are starting to plateau. So if you look at the annual rate of transactions, in November, the last 12 months, we saw 3,800 transactions, just over 3,800. A year ago, we had 3,200 transactions the previous 12 months. So that's an increase of 16% on an annualized basis, which is a huge growth. Now, if you look at the average price, the 12-month average price in November of 2021 was $315,000. Last year, the average price was $286,000. Again, up a whopping 10%, double-digit increase. But this is what I wanted to note. If you look at the 12-month average price of a single-family residential home in Leon County, it was $315,000. If you look at the November price, it was $313,000. So that is almost equal to the average. That's not the way it was a year ago. There was a $30,000 difference between the average and the price in November. So the point being, prices are starting to flatten out. Transactions are still high, so we'll have to see if that continues in December and January, if those trends do. Now, the last two things I wanted to point out is the inventory of homes, which is the homes that are for sale, is down from a year ago. There were 730 homes listed for sale in November. That is down 7.5% from the 795 last year, and last month there was 826. So the number of homes for sale is definitely decreasing, and also it's taking a little bit longer to sell homes. The average time on the market was 46 days in November. A year ago that was 50. So you say, yeah, it is faster than it was a year ago, but back over the last 3 or 4 months it was like 35 days, 38 days. So it's definitely slowing down. And so all these are changes in the real estate market that we're going to keep you abreast of. It's not bad news. What it does is it's things that are changing. We've still got numbers up on transactions. But as you know, people get nervous with the run-up that we had on prices over the last couple of years. You know, you start thinking back to 2008 when real estate crashed. We've talked about why it's probably different now, because one of the major things is, you know, the relationship with mortgage rates. So anyway, we'll keep bringing you this information, and you can get more at TejasReports.com. All right, thanks for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed the show. We'll have an update on the various meetings today on our Thursday show, so be sure and tune in then. I'm Steve Stewart. You've been listening to Above the Fold.